You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We've been following the news this afternoon that Israel announced a ground invasion into the Gaza Strip. We got some response earlier from Jennifer Lowenstein, professor of Middle East Studies at University of Wisconsin-Madison. That was earlier in the show. Now, for more analysis of the current situation and how we got here, we have Ilan Peleg. He's a professor of government and law at Lafayette College. He's founding editor-in-chief of the Israel Studies Forum and the author of several books on Middle East politics. Ilan, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
What do we know so far about Israel's goals in announcing this ground invasion?
Well, I think that there are several goals mostly. I think one of the major ones is to stop the rockets or the missiles that have been launched against the Israeli territory over the last 10 days. I think the other objectives are to close off the tunnels that have been built by the Hamas and that are leading toward Israel. And I very much hope that the other goal, political goal, is to bring about a ceasefire in this situation and to get into some kind of political negotiations with the other side.
Do you think that a ground invasion is likely to convince Hamas in particular to engage in that kind of negotiations?
I think Hamas may not have a choice in the matter. I think that they're under enormous amount of pressure, not only from the Israelis, but very interestingly, also from the PA under the leadership of Mahmoud Abbas or Abu Mazen. And they're also under, and this is also quite surprising, under enormous pressure from the Egyptians to stop the fire and get into negotiations.
And that's people have been paying attention to that. The Muslim Brotherhood government of Egypt changed. It's no longer there. Was that a key supporter for Hamas in up to recent years?
Yes, yes. The Hamas, in effect, is the Gaza Strip extension of the Muslim Brotherhood of Egypt. And certainly President Morsi, the ex-President Morsi, was ideologically at least quite sympathetic to the Hamas. Egypt, of course, has a new government under General al-Sisi, and this particular government is actually quite opposed to the Hamas and very much hostile to it. So I think that you have here an emergence of sort of a strange coalition, if you will, that may include the Israelis, Abu Mazen, and General Sisi against Hamas. And so Hamas is under enormous pressure to move into different kind of relationships with those parties.
One concern and criticism of Israel is that the bombing campaign in response to Hamas rocket attacks, the Israeli bombing has involved a lot of civilian deaths on the Gaza side. A ground invasion will have as many or more. How much does that drive a wedge in any hopes of future ceasefire talks?
Yeah, there is no question about it that this is indeed a major concern. And I think the Israelis should try to minimize as much as humanly possible the number of people who are killed and injured in this operation. So I think this is a real consideration, and I would personally be very supportive of bringing this operation to conclusion as soon as humanly possible and getting to the negotiating table.
What would be, from the Israeli perspective, a completed mission here? Is it dismantling the rocket capabilities of Hamas, capturing leadership, or a ceasefire actually observed by those behind the rocket attacks?
Well, obviously, I'm not a spokesman for the Israeli government, but as an analyst, I would say that bringing about a cessation of the rocket launching would be certainly a major goal. We are aware of the fact that over the last 48 hours or 72 hours, there have been tremendous efforts to bring Hamas around to a ceasefire. These efforts have not been successful. First of all, you had the Egyptian proposal of, I believe, 2 days ago, Tuesday morning, and then you had yesterday a so-called humanitarian ceasefire for 5 hours. So far, this has not led the Hamas to stop the fire, and once they do, I think the path may be open, hopefully, to more productive political negotiations.
Even if we get to some kind of lasting ceasefire, are we just going to be here again in 2 years or 5 years? Is there anything that's going to point toward a longer resolution here?
Yeah, I think your question is very well put. We have been in this movie already several times over the last 6 or 7 years that Hamas has been ruling Gaza. So I think the goal really has to be, first of all, a fairly lengthy ceasefire, maybe 10 years or so, but I think also a more prominent role for Abu Mazen and his government in Gaza, the creation of a government that really supports the idea of a two-state solution and a negotiated settlement of the entire Palestinian-Israeli conflict.
That's a tall order.
Yes, this is a very, very tall order. I think that we have been at it in some ways since 1967, and more specifically, certainly over the last 20 years since the Oslo Agreement of 1993. And indeed, this is a very tall order that put tremendous pressure, in my opinion, on both sides to cease the fire and to get to the type of negotiations that the Obama administration indeed has been trying to promote over the last 2 or 3 years.
One contradiction here, maybe, it seems that it's very difficult to have this kind of lasting ceasefire with Hamas playing a role in the government. On the other hand, it seems very difficult to rule in Gaza without cooperation from Hamas. How do you thread that needle? How do you make that work?
That's true. This is indeed a contradiction, and I think that there has to be pressure internationally and otherwise on Hamas to change its covenant, which clearly talks about the elimination and the destruction of Israel, and to join the other Palestinians in an effort to change the reality of the Middle East. So I agree that the issue, I think, is a fundamental ideology of Hamas that has been very, very radicalized. Your listeners can go into a website and read the Covenant of Hamas. It has been a very radical document, and I think it has to change, and I think the policy has to change in order to have any kind of hope for a better future for this region.
On the other hand, it seems that some of the support for Hamas among Palestinians comes from a feeling that Israel is developing settlements in places they say are illegal under past agreements. There's nobody really standing up to that. Hamas isn't much. In effect, I think people are saying, but it's all we've got. It's our only forceful military resistance to what we see as Israeli aggression. I think that's a fair characterization of some Palestinian perspectives.
Yeah, but I would not agree that nobody stands up to it. I think the American government has been very strongly criticizing the settlement policy. Many Israelis have been quite critical of it. I think the Abu Mazen government certainly has been against it. So I don't think that the Hamas are the only one who are opposed to a settlement policy. I think that this is a position that has been taken actually by quite a lot of Israelis and quite a lot of even Israeli supporters in the United States. I think this is a controversial policy that, as a matter of fact, has been criticized by many, many American administrations, practically speaking, all American administrations since 1967.
I'd like to talk about the internal debates on both sides of this. Do you see support for Hamas declining on the Palestinian side? Do people blame them for the consequences of these conflicts?
Yes, yes. There has been a quite surprising, maybe, or not, a criticism on the part of Palestinians. It is, of course, very, very difficult to conduct Gallup polls or any other polls that are accurate enough to know exactly how powerful this opposition is. On the other hand, as we know from other conflicts all over the world for many, many decades and even centuries, whenever a country or population is under attack, the leadership tends to get support. So this is an issue that I think divides the Palestinians. And I would say the Israelis are equally divided on many, many different issues regarding the so-called peace process.
And I wanted to ask about that. There's pressure for more aggressive military action from some in Israel and some critical of the bombing so far and this ground invasion. I haven't seen that response yet, but I'm guessing it'll be coming. How does the Israeli government balance those two perspectives?
Yeah, I think you are very accurate in saying that. I think the Israeli government of Mr. Netanyahu had a lot of pressure from within to expand the military operation. On the other hand, you know, you had several demonstrations in Tel Aviv and other Israeli cities against this military operation. So I think they have pressure from the right to expand the operation, but pressure from the left to cease the operation. And, you know, Israel is a democratic country, and they will have to sort it out and eventually get the support of the people for whatever policy they have. I think that, by the way, that as the longer this military operation on the ground continues, you can expect more and more opposing positions, as we have had in the past in terms of similar operations.
We're talking with Ilan Peleg about the current situation in the Gaza Strip. He's professor of government and law at Lafayette University, editor-in-chief of the Israel Studies Forum. You can join the conversation with your questions, your comments at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. In particular, what would you like to see as an American response to the situation there? We'll pick up the conversation in just a moment. First, here's a check of the latest headlines with Kristen Durst.
Russian President Vladimir Putin says Ukraine bears responsibility for the crash of a Malaysian airliner. Kremlin quotes Putin as telling a meeting of his economic advisors, quote, this tragedy would not have happened if there were peace, unquote. In Ukraine, the military actions had not been renewed. Both the government and the pro-Russia separatists fighting in eastern Ukraine deny responsibility for downing the aircraft. A fast-growing wildfire burning in Washington has burned at least two homes. The Carlton Complex of Fires covers 28 square miles of the scenic valley near the town of Twisp. A fire official says there are unconfirmed reports that eight other homes have been burned. Wisconsin's unemployment rate is holding steady. The State Department of Workforce Development reported today that the unemployment rate was 5.7% in June, unchanged from May. The state lost 1,200 private sector jobs overall between May and June. However, the numbers are based on a survey of roughly 3.5% of the state's employers and subject to significant revisions. For Central Time, I'm Kristen Durst.
Weekends on WPR are fun and informative.
Yeah, you guys have been great. You know, you've really inspired me. I actually own chickens now because of you, Chris.
And the return on investment is amazing because they give you an egg almost every day.
Until they stop, and then they give you dinner.
That's true.
I looked for the right moment, and I popped him one in the jaw.
Listen on the weekends right here on Wisconsin Public Radio. See the schedule at WPR.org. Support for WPR comes from our contributing members, including the growing number of sustaining members who make ongoing monthly gifts. Thanks to your reliable support, thoughtful programs have a secure home on WPR. Thank you. Support also comes from the Museum of Wisconsin Art in West Bend. On view through September 14th, John Stewart Curry, At Home in Wisconsin, the first ever exhibition dedicated to the regionalists' years in Wisconsin. More at wisconsinart.org.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about the ground invasion of the Gaza Strip announced by Israel. The news broke earlier this afternoon. This broke today after days of bombings by Israel of the Gaza area and rocket launches from Gaza into Israel. You can join the conversation with your questions, your perspectives, your comments at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Our guest is Ilan Peleg. He's professor of government and law at Lafayette University. He's the founding editor-in-chief of the Israel Studies Forum. He's written several books on Middle Eastern politics. We'll go to our callers now. We've got Jess on the line in Milwaukee. Jess, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I would like just to remind people that this all started because three teenage boys were kidnapped and then murdered. If the Palestinians didn't want a reprisal, then they should have at least ponied up the people who had committed this heinous act, and then there would have been the response Israel is giving now. It all gets lost back and forth between they're launching rockets and Israel is now what they're going to do. But it all started this episode with the abduction of three teenage boys.
Jess, thanks for the call. And that does take us back. That was the triggering episode. Ilan, the kidnapping, then not cooperation or lack of cooperation, evidently an attempt to bring the killers to justice. How did we go from there to where we are now?
Yes, I think that I definitely agree with the comment that Jess has made. Indeed, the three individuals, two of them 16 years old, the other one 18 years old, were hitchhiking, and somebody gave them a ride, so to speak, and immediately apparently killed them. This generated an Israeli operation trying to apprehend the guilty parties, and this indeed then led the Hamas to start a huge operation of bombardment of, practically speaking, all parts of Israel. Right now, I think we are talking about roughly 1,000 rockets that have been launched against Israel. And I think that it's quite clear, regardless of whatever position you may take on the settlements or other issues, that no government can really allow anything of that nature to continue. So I think this gives you the sort of the general background to the outburst of violence that we have seen over the last 10 days.
Well, it seems like the scales are so tipped heavily on the side of violence and war as opposed to peace. It's simple for one person or one small group of people to commit an act of violence that sets off this chain of escalation.
Yes, yes, absolutely. You are right. And we have seen it in many other conflicts, such as Northern Ireland in the past and in other places, that radicalized parties on different parts do take control of the agenda. This is very, very unfortunate.
Jess, thanks for the call. We'll go now to Seymour in Madison. Seymour, hi, you're on the air.
Okay, I have two comments. The first one concerns the settlements. I think both groups are playing games with regard to the settlements. If they would sit down to a discussion of a peace treaty with a two-state solution, the decision as to whether there would continue to be settlements in the so-called occupied areas would be made. The Israelis, under the peace treaty with Egypt, they pulled out of Egypt. They pulled out of Gaza. If the peace treaty said they had to pull out of the current settlements, they would have to pull out of the current settlements. And I think that Netanyahu knows that it inflames the Arabs if there are settlements, and Abbas knows that his people won't listen to this simple argument. And now the second point I'd like to make is that every time you hear a spokesman for Hamas talking about why this is going on, they mention the occupation. But Gaza is not occupied. The only occupiers of Gaza is Hamas. Thank you. I'll take my answer off the air.
Seymour, thanks for the call. Ilan, response to what he had to say?
Yeah, I think that the comment that Simo is making is useful, if I totally understand him. I think the settlements have been a major issue, sometimes inflaming the relationships that are not easy under the best of circumstances. Nevertheless, I think that over the last several years, there have been an agreement, a quiet agreement, not formal yet, that several of the settlements will stay where they are, and there is going to be the swapping of territories between the Israelis and the Palestinians. And I think this is a formula that can work out in terms of exchanging territories on the basis of one-to-one and reaching the two-state solution, with several of the settlements remaining, others being removed, and so on and so forth. So that's in regards to the first question. The second question related to the occupation of Gaza. What happened is that in 2006 you had elections in the Gaza Strip, and I believe, unfortunately, the Hamas forces won these elections. And when they took over, they, in effect, removed all the PA forces out. They arrested some of them. They killed some of them. And, in effect, have established a government that is very, very non-compromising in its attitude toward the Israelis. And I think that we have seen the result of it over the last several days, and I think the way to move out of that is really to bring back the PA into some kind of power sharing, maybe in Gaza, so Gaza can become part and parcel of the negotiating process.
Briefly, who makes that happen? Hamas doesn't necessarily want to voluntarily bring the Palestinian Authority back into authority.
I totally agree, but that's why I emphasize that they are under enormous pressure to do so. As a matter of fact, I think that the very weak position of Hamas probably was the fundamental cause for their aggressive behavior that has begun about 10 days or 2 weeks ago. Okay, so in many ways, there are some interpreters of the situation who believe that this attack had very little to do with the relationship between Hamas and Israel, but much more with the economic situation in Gaza, the weakness of the Hamas, the very fact that Hamas is now in no relationship with the Egyptians, on whom they depend in terms of the passages between the Sinai and the Gaza Strip, and so forth.
We'll leave it there for now. Ilan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Robert.
That was Ilan Peleg. He's professor of government and law at Lafayette University and founding editor-in-chief of the Israel Studies Forum.